How's Mildred?
Oh, Mildred's fine. Apart from some son of a bitch banging on the inside of my head with a hammer. Oh.
Mildred Wyeth was a doctor, born in December 1964, well over 130 years earlier. She'd gone into the hospital for a minor operation in the last days of December in the year 2000, just 3 weeks before the nuke madness that brought utter ruin to the world. As a result of a medical accident, Mildred had been cryogenically frozen, lying in suspended animation until snatched from her endless sleep by Ryan Carter and his comrades. Since then, she'd been one of them, sharing their small triumphs as well as their dangers. Now she was sitting up, rubbing at the side of her face, which was still badly swollen from the brutal beating she'd taken from Court Strasser.
I'll never get used to these jumps. Ugh.
JB nodded in agreement and turned to look at the last member of their quintet.
Whoa, Doc doesn't look so good.
Doc had an even stranger life history than Mildred. Born Theophilus Algernon Tanner in South Stratford, Vermont, on February 14, 1868, he had a glittering career as a scientist and was married with two small children. But in November 1896, he was trawled into the future. He was an experiment of Project Cerberus, which was a part of Overproject Whisper, itself a small cog within the vast secret machine known by the codename of the Totality Concept. Previous attempts to bring and send people through the barrier of time resulted in piles of jelly and unanswered questions back in their own times. The Whitecoats' only success, if you could call it that, was Dr. Theophilus Tanner. Doc was a prickly and difficult subject, deeply disturbed at losing his wife, family, and friends. He made several illicit attempts to rejoin them, despite the risks of the unstable equipment. Finally, to get rid of him, the white-coated operators of Cerberus sent him off into the future, to Deathlands. The effects of the appalling disorientation meant that Doc would never again be totally sane. At his best, he was only a couple cents short of a dollar. Sometimes, he completely lost track of quite when he was living. Now he lay on his side, knees drawn under him, a trail of spittle linking his open mouth to the polished floor of the gateway chamber. His stubbled face was parchment pale, and his breathing was ragged. His right hand clutched his precious sword stick, which was made of ebony, with a silver handle shaped like a lion's head. He was unconscious. Mildred got to her hands and knees and crawled to the old man's side. None of them actually knew how old Doc really was. He'd only been in his late 20s when he was trawled forward, yet he looked and acted like a man in his 60s. It was, as best as they could guess, a byproduct of tampering with temporal paradoxes.
He's gonna be all right.
By now, all four of them were standing around Doc Tanner. His eyes finally blinked open.
By the three Kennedys! I feel akin to a man who has fallen down a deep well. Could you possibly stand a tad farther away while I recover myself?
Helped by Mildred and JB, he stood reasonably well. He wiped away the saliva.
Did anyone else find that a particularly pain-filled jump?
Yeah, worst I've known.
Could be there was a malfunction in the equipment.
Christy was looking around the chamber. She stood still for a few moments, eyes closed, concentrating, using some of the strange muti power of the Earth Mother to try to see their surroundings.
No, I can't feel anything. It's always hard inside these places. They seem to sort of muffle the reception for me.
Well then, we better go look. Everyone ready?
As I'll ever be, my dear fellow.
The others contented themselves with nodding, and all drew their blasters. Christy had a silvered Heckler & Koch P7A13 9mm pistol. JB wielded his trusty Steyr AUG 5.6mm automatic. Mildred, who had represented the United States in the free-shooting pistol event in the last ever Olympic Games before Skydark, had an exotic target blaster. It was a beautiful ZKR 551 six-shot revolver, chambered to take a Smith & Wesson 38 round. Ryan had his usual Sig Sauer P226 blaster with the built-in baffle silencer. Doc, true to character, had what was probably the only Lamar Civil War revolver in the whole of Deathlands. It shot either a single 63 caliber round from a scattergun barrel or revolved 9 standard 36 caliber bullets. Ryan looked at his ragtag army, caught Christie's emerald eyes, and grinned.
Well, here we go again, lover.
Christie didn't return his smile. Ryan turned away from her and reached for the lever that would open the gateway.
Ready? Okay, let's go.
The thick armored glass swung back, revealing the usual small anteroom that was present in all of the redoubts the companions had visited. This one was about 12 feet square, with benches along two walls and a fold-down table. The door set in the far wall was ajar, showing the main control room. Everything was as it had been in other gateways. Ryan led the way out, pausing as he entered the larger room, waiting for Christie to join him.
Well?
She closed her eyes and stood still, shaking her head.
Can't do it, lover.
Why?
Can't override my imagination. Worst enemy of someone with the power of seeing. Doomies suffer from it even worse.
Wouldn't have thought it.
JB looked at the control consoles, rows of vid screens and comp processors, with dancing lines of details, numbers, and codes. Lights flickered and shone green, amber, and red.
Looks good and clean.
In the past, they'd entered control bases and found frightening evidence of malfunction. All redoubts had been built with their own nuke gens, and most of these continued to work, long years after their human masters had vanished into ashes. Doc glanced around, holstering the massive Lamar pistol.
Ship-shape and Bristol fashion.
People who built these complexes sure built them to last.
Mildred ran her finger along one of the desks, showing it dust-free to the others.
See? Spotless.
There's anti-stat conditioning here, filters and cleans. Without anyone coming or going for 100 years, there's no disturbance. Though there's some plasma mugs along the consoles over there.
It was the kind of thing that Jack Lauren would have darted toward. Christie walked slowly and picked up one of them. She peered into it and pulled a face.
Long, long gone.
Ryan joined her and picked up another of the disposable beakers. The inside bore a faint stain of brown, but was utterly dry.
If they had been topped up, I would have raised one and given you a toast. To our friends from... Oh!
Liquid splashed all over the front of his stained frock coat, adding another layer to the patina of antique dirt. Everyone stared at Doc in disbelief. Doc looked at the wetness on his clothes and dripping from his fingers.
How can this be? A century come and a century gone, and this still holds... what is a perfectly acceptable substitute for coffee?
Ryan dipped a finger into the cup and tasted it.
Huh. Sweet as well.
Wait, but there isn't even any mold visible. In a controlled temperature, the cream subsweetener would have mold growing on it in less than 72 hours.
Doesn't make sense, does it? This place looks like nobody set foot in it since 2001, but... Huh.
He looked around the big room, wondering for a moment if someone was watching them.
I think we better look out in the corridor.
Apart from the entrance to the anteroom and the gateway beyond, the control suite had only one other door. Beyond it would lay a passage, probably high, wide, and curving. There would be strip lighting in the angles between walls and ceiling, and perhaps tiny vid sec cameras watching the endless emptiness. And beyond that, the massive sprawling complex of the hidden redoubt would hold mysteries kept from man's eyes for a century. At least, it was usually like that.
This looks different.
The usual, immensely heavy sec door they'd encounter had a simple, consistent number code. To open it, you keyed in 352, and to close it, 253. This was something else. The door was much lighter, with an armor-glass panel set in its top half, and a central wheel control to open and close it. There was no comp panel at its side to work the mechanism. Doc peered through the window, shading it with his hand against the myriad reflecting lights.
Upon my soul.
What is it, Doc?
If I was fond of a wager, then I would lay a little jack that we have a sort of airlock here. But why?
Anything in there, Doc?
Nothing. And there's... Ah, what have we here?
Doc began to investigate a series of dials and scaled displays at the right side of the door.
Air pressure. Internal and external.
I don't get it. They aren't working. And they show an outer pressure way too low.
Open it up, JB. Slow and real easy.
The armorer took the central wheel and braced himself against it. Immediately it began to move, the polished chrome glittering in the bright lights of the control room.
Been greased recently, Ryan.
Keep turning.
The intermediate room was about 8 feet square, with a high ceiling. A vid set camera stared unblinkingly down from a corner. The walls